Hi there, it's Ed here with a short message before we start the pod this week. Did you know that our most informed investors get insights, articles and investment ideas from Tom, me and the team sent directly to them via email, and it is completely free. You can join them. Just subscribe at fidelity.co.uk/newsletters. Hello and welcome to the Personal Investor Podcast. I'm Ed Monk. Today on the show, what explains the UK stock market's pedestrian performance versus its peers over the last few years? And is there a case that it can finally catch up? That's our focus today, along with the big economic data arriving this week. If you enjoy the show, please rate us, share us, or leave a comment wherever you get your podcasts. There was once a time when it made a lot of sense for British investors to turn, first and foremost, to their home market. The UK stock market was filled with multinational, internationally facing companies in established defensive industries. In a world of steadily declining bond yields, the chunky dividends that these giant companies paid were even more attractive, and UK investors could expect both growth and income with relatively little risk. At some point, however, the UK market began to struggle to keep up with its peers, most notably, of course, the US. And anyone making big bets on the UK recently will have underperformed global returns. What has been behind the malaise, and can it be reversed? To help answer that, I'm joined by Tom Stevenson, Investment Director here at Fidelity. Tom, welcome along. I guess there's two sides to this discussion. There's one about the UK economy and how it has performed, and then there's one about the UK stock market specifically. We're going to come on to the economy a bit later on. We've got news this week on inflation and rates, and we'll cover those. But let's start with the stock market, shall we? And my framing in that intro, Tom, is it fair? Has there been a worsening in what the UK market can offer investors?
Yeah, hi Ed. I think over the long haul, there has been a deterioration in the returns that the UK market can offer. And actually, this is kind of disguised if you look at the picture through the lens of the FTSE 100, which is what we tend to do. But I actually recently had a bit of fun with looking at comparing the US market with the FTSE 250, which of course is a much more domestically focused market. And what I discovered was that between the financial crisis and 2016, and we know what happened in 2016, and maybe that's a hint of one of the reasons why this happened. But between 2009 and 2016, the FTSE 250 actually tracked more or less exactly the performance of the US market, the S&P 500. And then in 2016, we had this really noticeable divergence in returns, and the US stock market, as we know, powered ahead and has done extremely well in the 8 years since, and the 250 lagged behind. But so it's a very striking chart. You get this almost sort of like for like mirroring of performance for 8 years, seven or eight years, and then you get this massive divergence.
And what you're referring to, I guess, is Brexit that occurred, or at least the vote to leave happened in 2016. But to say that's the cause of anything definite in markets is hard, isn't it? You can't, or it's difficult to disentangle all the factors affecting markets. Correlation is not the same as causation. I think you've said that yourself in writing about this. But what can we say about the drivers? I mean, Brexit perhaps was an issue, but there were others as well, surely. I mean, the US market is the big comparison here. That has benefited from the emergence of tech. Now, that wasn't precisely at 2016 or any precise date, really. But it's probably fair to say that over the last 10 years, that dominance has escalated, it's crystallised, hasn't it? So that will be a factor. It's not just one moment in time, one factor.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's not, I think Brexit is clearly a factor, but it's not the only one. And you've highlighted, one of the other important elements, which is the sector composition of the two markets. And clearly the last 8-9 years has been dominated by the performance of technology stocks, which of course the US is well endowed with big successful technology stocks. We don't have that benefit of it. So I think sector composition is part of it. And I think that it's not just Brexit. I mean, but it's related. I think since Brexit, there has been a lot of political uncertainty in the UK. We've had a lot of prime ministers. We've had a lot of sort of turbulence on the political front, which obviously is related to Brexit, but it's not, you know, it's not a direct cause.
Yeah.
The Brexit was not a direct cause of that uncertainty. So I think that's one element. And relatively speaking, the UK has looked like an uncertain environment, and I think that's affected sentiment. And the consequence of that has been, you know, a sharp reduction in the valuation, the multiple of earnings that investors have been prepared to pay for a share of the UK market.
Yeah. And you use the word there, sentiment. I mean, that strikes me as being quite important in this discussion because, you know, and it was in the work that you looked at, it's almost as though even if you account for different industries across different markets, there still seems to be a discount being applied to the UK. So two very similar companies, one in the UK, one in the US, making broadly similar amounts of money, the UK company will trade at a bigger discount relative to the American one. And that suggests there is something going on to do with how investors feel about the UK.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, a bit of a hat tip here to our friends and colleagues over at Rathbones, because they did some analysis of the returns and what they attempted to do, in a way which, you know, I don't fully understand myself, but they basically adjusted the returns to account for differences in the sector composition, yeah, differences in the growth rates of the companies on either side of the Atlantic, the quality of companies, their balance sheet strength, etc. All these different factors. And the conclusion that they came to was that even if you adjust for all of those things, there is still a significant discount in terms of valuation between the US market and the UK market. They also actually, you know, took head on the Brexit question, and they did the same analysis before 2016 mm-hmm. and after 2016, and they showed that actually that didn't really provide a full explanation either. And in particular, they said that this discount, which applies to the UK, applies equally to big multinational companies as it does to UK focused yes. companies. So that kind of suggests that
it's, you know, not a
Brexit
growth question.
is not the full answer.
Yes.
It's not the full answer. So it just seems like, you know, over the last 8 years or so, there's been a general pessimism about the outlook for the UK.
Yeah. Oh, and that's not to say, Tom, is it, that the UK will always underperform the US market? I mean, last year, that was certainly the case when the US was very, very strong. I think it's right to say that the year before, there was big falls in the US and the UK market trod water. It was about level. It was basically a kind of defensive play at
yeah,
that point.
It was. 2022 was a very difficult year for many investors. But actually, the UK, you know, stayed above water pretty much through mm. through the whole year. It was a very defensive market that year.
So on this point about valuations, I guess what we're saying here is, you know, maybe that's an opportunity, but we have been saying for a while that the UK has been in this position vis-a-vis other markets. So what might change, and when might it change? Is there going to be a catalyst to unlock some of this value?
Yeah, I mean, it's entirely possible that the UK never actually fully catches up with the US. I mean, there are, you know, long-term good reasons why the US should probably be valued more highly than the UK. So I suspect that there will always be something of a discount between yeah. the two markets. But I do think that the gap, you know, should narrow. Valuations and market performance generally does tend to revert to the mean to an extent. Mm. And I think the divergence that we have in valuations is so extreme now that the US market is trading at around 21 times expected earnings. The UK stock market is trading, both the FTSE 100 and the FTSE 250 are trading at about 11 times expected earnings. That's historically a very wide divergence of valuations. And I think that, you know, in terms of, if you're looking for a catalyst for change, I think if you look at the both the political and the economic situation in the UK at the moment, there is more stability than there has been for some time. I think also there are fewer extremes than there have been recently. If you look at the current leadership of both political parties, they have both moved towards the centre.
Yeah.
And that's true of the Conservatives. It's also true of Labour. If you look back to the Boris Johnson versus Jeremy Corbyn years, you know, big extremes there. And if you look at the Rishi Sunak Starmer face-off, it's a battle between the range two centrists,
of,
really.
Yeah, the range of possibilities is much more narrow, isn't it, with those two. And big questions around the UK's trading relationships are more settled. They might not be everyone's idea of ideal, but they are more settled than they were, you know, a few years
ago.
Yes,
and the direction of travel does seem to be towards a slightly closer relationship. I mean, you know, neither side is saying we're going to go back to how we were before. That seems clear. But the direction of travel does seem to be more favourable.
Yes, indeed. Now, we know that there isn't a perfect correlation, is there, between economic performance and stock market performance, particularly given that what we've said about the sort of international sort of aspect to the UK market. But the two are related, aren't they? What's the story of UK growth at the moment? Could an uptick in growth be the catalyst for an uptick in sentiment around the market as well?
Yeah, well, I think it probably could. We had a bit of an update on the UK growth picture at the budget. When was that? Two weeks ago.
Yeah.
I forget. Anyway, we had an update from the Office for Budget Responsibility, which actually increased its forecast both for this year and for next year. So for this year, they nudged up their forecast from 0.7% growth to 0.8%, I think. And next year, actually, by a slightly larger amount, I think from 1.4% to 1.9%. So the growth picture does seem to be stabilising and slightly improving. And at the same time, we've got a much more favourable inflation picture in the UK. So we know that, you know, back in October 2022, which not coincidentally was also the bottom of that bull market, bear market that we talked about in 2022. Inflation peaked at 11.1% here in the UK. It's now down at 4%. This week, we've got some inflation figures tomorrow. We're talking on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. They're
Double
coming
Wednesday
out
morning.
On Wednesday. The expectation is that they're going to be down at 3.5%. For the month of February, and probably they're going to fall back to target in the short term. And the reason for that is that in April, we've got a reduction. We know there's going to be a reduction in gas and electricity prices, and that's going to have a big impact on the inflation rate. So I think on both the growth and the inflation fronts, things are looking a bit healthier in the UK. So that might be a positive for sentiment.
Yeah, and we've spoken about central bank policy many times, and this moment that we're all waiting for when they begin to cut interest rates, satisfied that inflation is under control. Inflation falling in the UK back to 2%, which is the target, that might not be exactly the same as saying that the bank is satisfied that it's now, inflation is no longer a problem, is it? They'll be wary of it returning, and so that you might not see an immediate cut to rates straight away, but there will be huge pressure, won't there, on the Bank of England to cut rates. As soon as that inflation figure gets down to target, rates will be way above that at that point. And so, you know, the bank was criticised, wasn't it, for moving perhaps too slowly in stifling inflation and raising rates. It doesn't want to be accused of moving too slowly again and leaving rates too high for too long.
Yeah. Central banks all over the world, and in particular on either side of the Atlantic, are extremely cautious about not repeating the mistakes of the past. If you go back to the 1970s, you know, there was a spike in inflation. It appeared to have been beaten. Inflation came back down to target. Central banks relaxed. They eased back on interest rates. And we had another second spike in inflation, and which was very damaging and took a long time to squeeze out of the system. So I think central banks are really conscious of not making that mistake again. But you're absolutely right. It becomes an increasingly difficult position to hold for the bank if inflation is back down to target at 2%, to have interest rates of 5.25%, which is where they are currently, will seem slightly strange, and the bank will be under a lot of pressure to cut rates. But I think, you know, both the Fed and the Bank of England are slightly sitting on their hands at the moment. They're waiting for clear evidence that wage growth in particular is under control, because that's the issue. Wage growth is still well ahead of the headline rate.
Above 5%, I think, in the UK.
Yeah, 5 or 6% wage growth. And that makes it... That raises the fear that actually the fall back in inflation to target is a temporary thing predicated on this cut in household energy costs, and that actually the underlying forces are still inflationary. So that's what they're keeping an eye on.
Okay. Well, Tom, that is all the time we have for now. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Ed.
Please note that the value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. Investors should note that the views expressed may no longer be current and may have already been acted upon. This information is not a personal recommendation for any particular investment. If you are unsure about the suitability of an investment, you should speak to one of Fidelity's advisors or an authorised financial advisor of your choice. Overseas investments will be affected by movements in currency exchange rates, and investments in emerging markets can be more volatile than other more developed markets. Reference to the specific securities should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell these securities, and is included for the purposes of illustration only. Tax treatment depends on individual circumstances, and all tax rules may change in the future. Withdrawals from a pension product may not be possible until you reach age 55, 57 from 2028. This podcast may not be reproduced or circulated without prior permission. No statements or representations made in this podcast are legally binding on Fidelity or the recipient. This podcast is meant only for UK residents and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation in any jurisdiction in which it may be unlawful to make such an offer or solicitation.